I'm John Batchelor, visiting with David Archibald, who's very kind to help me understand chemistry and mining and transportation and geopolitics from the Southern Hemisphere, where it is coming springtime. Wonderful to consider. David, if I may review some of the information I've taken down in my notes hastily. There are two most desirable rare earths. They're in ionic clay, which is the deposit we're looking for. One has got the symbol TY, the other one TB, the other one has the symbol DY. The reason they're most desirable is that they permit the magnet to function at very high temperatures, which is part of the needs for aircraft engines, for example, when they get very hot, one to 100 degrees and another one to 150 degrees. And the Chinese no longer have a monopoly on those two, if I heard you correctly. Is that correct, David?
No, the monopoly basically continues for the moment. Apart from the minor production out of Australia, I don't think there's much else dysprosium terbium production.
Are dysprosium and terbium in abundance in China? Maybe I should have put it that way. Or are they looking to other sources?
No, it seems that the Chinese are running out of those things. And so 40% of their dysprosium terbium production is ultimately sourced out of Myanmar in the area that's fighting the military government.
Does Australia have terbium and dysprosium to sell to China?
To China? We'd want to actually sell it out of a Chinese processing stream. So there is terbium and dysprosium produced out of China, out of Australia, but it's because the ore sources being used in Australia at the moment are monazite, the ratio of neodymium, praseodymium, which are the less valuable to rare earths, to dysprosium and terbium, is quite low. Or it's high, in fact. It's high, so the dysprosium-terbium proportion right at the moment is low, but will rise with there's another mine coming on stream to feed the Iluka processing facility, which has a higher content of those two elements.
So as long as there's a profit motive flowing into this, there will be further search in Western Australia, in Australia, for rare earths and rare earth searches around the world. The old salt, David, the answer to high prices is high prices. And if people can get involved in this, monetizing it, they will. You say there will be a processing plant in America. Is that correct? And Australia can deal with that as well.
Yes. I don't know where it'll be.
Yes. There is always the environmental concern. The handshake between Mr. Albanese and Mr. Trump, was that encouraging to Perth, Western Australia, that it'll be at the center of this search, this rush of a search? It's like a gold strike, David. Is there excitement about it?
The share prices have gone up, but I would caution that we're heading for structural oversupply in the short term, unless the consumption continues to rise dramatically. Bear in mind that the Iluka plant at 5,500 ton per annum of neodymium praseodymium will supply about 20% of the world's current non-Chinese consumption of those things. So it won't take too much more production to put us into oversupply, structural oversupply. And that is why I believe that MP Materials, that's running the Mountain Pass mine, has been given a floor price of $110 US per kilo of mixed neodymium and praseodymium oxide, whereas the Shanghai price at the moment is about $60 a kilo. And because they've got cheaper production out of straight ionic clays as opposed to a raw mineral that has to be cracked with sulfuric acid. But it'll take those sort of subsidies or floor prices to keep the plants open this time so that Chinese predatory pricing won't get them to close in the near term.
The narrative you provide about Chinese predatory pricing, is that common knowledge in Canberra? Does everybody know that they've done this and that we've watched it happen over decades?
It's a deliberate policy, in particular in rare earths, because they want to dominate the supply chain and use it as a weapon against the West. It's also happening in copper smelting at the moment, that the Chinese smelters are being subsidized by the government, and that's forcing others to close their smelters.
I see.
And around the world.
Mr. Albanese is informed of these matters, and your government is that correct, David?
He is on rare earths, I would believe, yep.
And that means the U.S. is well informed. And we've watched this happen over a long period of time. One more time to make sure that I have my notes correct. There are other rare earths we've not spoken of that have their uses. So there's more to this than just Dy and Tb. You've mentioned in a report gallium, for example, which is desirable for data centers. And is that available out of Australia that can be processed in Malaysia?
No, gallium's sort of chemistry is like lead, and it occurs in bauxite deposits. And see, the mines here run at 110 parts per million gallium in the raw ore. And you can take it off as part of the process stream in the refining of the bauxite to alumina. So there was a plant that operated here just south of Perth up to about the mid-90s. By the French company, Ron Falonc. It closed due to predatory Chinese pricing. But recently there's been a $200 million US plant's going to be built by Sojitz, a Japanese company, to take part of the process stream from that alumina refinery south of Perth and produce gallium.
David Archibald is a researcher in these matters. There's much more to learn. You can tell that. We just started on rare earth list. We've got the most expensive, but David just made the case that gallium also is considered a rare earth. And given the number of data centers that are being built right now, I can hear them hammering. We'll need all we can. David, I thank you very much for this initial lesson in rare earths from Western Australia, Perth, Western Australia. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.